You have soda here by the floor. If you want me to reach it for you, I can get it.
Me mini mechoni mishmoli got for you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for coming. I believe that the microphone is also transmitting to the Beis HaMedrash. So anybody who's in the Beis HaMedrash who can hear this, if you would like to learn without hearing Rabbi Rakefet, which would be a shame, but if you want to go learn without hearing Rabbi Rakefet, you can go downstairs to the social hall. Otherwise, you're very welcome in here. And ladies and gentlemen, afterwards, after the lecture, we're going to have, there'll be food and drink outside, and Rabbi Rakefet will sign books, and we'll give more details on that straight away after the lecture. It gives me great pleasure to welcome Rabbi Dr. Aaron Rakefet Rothkopf, Professor of Rabbinic Literature at Yeshiva University's Grus Institute in Israel.
They know who I am already. we had two introductions yesterday.
I thought it was for new people, but you know what? You know what? Everybody knows who Rabbi Rakefet
is. I'll introduce myself as I introduce myself.
Thank you.
Rabbi Kofnis B'Yashikayach. I'm only here because of Rabbi Kofnis, so you have to understand that. But my introduction is very simple. Here is a gentleman who grew up in the Bronx and took the message of Bnei Akiva and his Rebbeim in Yeshivas Reb Tzvi Yochanan very seriously. And the rest is history. Now, today, all the shirim I've given over Shabbat have been different. Today, it's a lecture that I will only give here. I don't want to give it anywhere else because this is, I've been told and I have experienced, they tell me Teaneck is, Bergenfield is the greatest YU community in the world. And I want to talk about YU today, the past, and I have some thoughts on the future. So I want to share it with you as we're all part of the same greater family, and we owe our Yiddishkeit, our commitment to the greater Yeshiva University community and ideal. I also want to mention, this is a phony book. It's Rakefet Aaron Chelek Dalet. It's a mock-up. The book is not yet ready. The manuscript is ready and all that goes into it, but we're yet many months from publication. It has to be on a level that I'll approve. This book is very different than all my previous 8 published volumes. Simply, it has 4 different sections. When the book comes out, we'll talk about the sections, but I want to talk about one today. It's the smallest section. It's documents and pictures. And when you look at it, you'll figure, all right, they're nice pictures, a few documents, fine. I want to give you the Torah Shebaal Peh behind the Torah Shebichtav now, because I consider those documents and pictures the most important and eternal part of the volume, with so much to learn from. Some of these ideas I referred to yesterday, and now I'm going to build upon them. First picture, there's a picture of the Yeshivas Reb Tzvi Yochanan, as we call it, Reitz, the Reitz faculty in 1944. And I identify everyone in that picture. So you're going to wonder, what's the Chiddush? Big deal, Reitz faculty, 1944, and everyone's identified. What's so new about this? Well, that picture is well known and has been circulating. And if you notice, in the last 20, 30 years, it circulates with one person marked unidentified. Today, I want to bring that man back to life. And there's a universal message and a Jewish message in what happened. As you know, the late 30s were a very difficult period for the yeshiva. They were starting to recover from the Depression, and the doors were being knocked down by Jews in Europe pleading for invitations so they could get non-quota immigrant visas. Those of you familiar with the American Jewish history know that in 1922, the McCarran Act went into law, and you couldn't come to the United States. Trump has problems today about immigration. Then all of America agreed to limit the people coming from all over the world. The quota for Eastern Europe was filled for the next 30, 40 years. It effectively meant that it was very difficult for an East European Jew, or a Western European Jew as well, to get to the United States after 1922. The only exceptions made, if you were an expert in a certain field and you were needed here, or you were a student who the yeshiva or the university felt this was the place for you to study, you could go about the process of getting what's called a non-quota immigrant visa. Well, Rabbi Revel, who then was the president, the first president in Rosh Yeshiva of what we call Yeshiva University today, was under tremendous pressure. And among the many people he saved, by the way, anyone here who has Yeki blood in them, Rabbi Joseph Breuer was saved by Rabbi Revel, who invited him to teach at the yeshiva. And that's a separate lecture, the relationship between Rabbis Breuer and Revel and a guy named Rakefit with the Breuer family, but we'll leave that for another time. Among the people he saved were two Tells yeshiva students. Rabbi Revel was autodidactic and a great genius. He never studied in a yeshiva, but the one yeshiva he studied in for one term was Tells. So he had a special affinity for Tells, and he saved two young men, Rabbi Yosef Leib Arnes and Rabbi Shmuel Eliezer Volk. Both of them are later appointed to the yeshiva faculty. Rabbi Volk goes to Baltimore, and about 1938-39, Rabbi Revel brings him to New York, and he begins his teaching at the yeshiva, where he taught for 33 years and had thousands of talmidim, myself included, and maybe some of you sitting here. Rabbi Volk represents a perfect portrait of what I spoke about on Shabbat in one of my shiurim. Hitler killed 6 million, destroyed the lives of another 5 million. You just think for a minute what it's like to be uprooted. Remember, these people were not going in Aliyah. We chose to go in Aliyah with all the hardship involved. New language, new culture, new mentality, new way of driving. Need not tell you. The problem with Israel is most of the drivers think they're still on a tank down in Sinai or up in Lebanon. But we chose. And Israel's a land of immigrants. No one came on the Mayflower there. And today I can boast I'm 50 years in Israel. Oh, wow. I've made it. Served in the army. I'm part of the crowd. 15 years in the army till first time they kicked me out, 49, I filed a letter of protest. They took me back. 54, you're gone. No letters, nothing helps. They salute you. I got a medal. Never heard from them again. My children, my grandchildren, Baruch Hashem, I contribute a whole unit to the army. But I worked for the Mossad, my wife and I, you all know it. The books have been, you don't have to believe what I wrote about it now, because the Mossad put out a volume, B'netiv HaDmama, and the stars are two kids from B'nai Akiva, the Bronx, Malkav Aharon, Rakefet. Rabbi Volk comes to America, ala pova chamato, he didn't choose. And here, a few years Talmud and got to know him, and we all lived in the Bronx. I was part of that clique. I was a Ben Bayit in his house. I knew his wife. I knew his children. I today know his grandchildren. And he was a very frustrated individual. In Europe, he would have been Echad Megedolei Yisrael. He was learning B'chavruta with Rabbi Asriel Rabinovich. That was the Telzer Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Chaim Rabinovich, the Telzer Rosh Yeshiva's son. He was killed by the Nazis. Hashem Yikom. There was a Godel Shebegedolim. And this was his, he would have been a Telzer Rosh Yeshiva. And there in America, frustrated, who recognized him? Who gave him cover? Who looked up to him? All right, we were his Talmidim, but we knew if you were smart and insightful, and I had him already when I was a college student, I understood his difficulties. The years went by, and in 1960, those of you who know, for those of you who are my students know, I've said this many times, everyone laughs, but it's a serious message. Torah disappeared from the YU scene in 1960. The day that Danny Greer came over to the Rav, September 1960, those of you have seen the picture, the Rav is sitting where I'm sitting. A kid named Donnie Rothkopf is sitting right here. Right here. The Rav couldn't walk in or walk out without my standing up and letting him go through. All right, I robbed a lot of oxygen from him, but I hope I also got a lot of Torah. So Danny Greer came over the Rav after the shiur. Rabbi, I didn't know at the time that the Rav knew Danny Greer. The Greer family were involved with Moriah. His father was in diamonds. And he comes over, chutzpan. Rabbi Soloveitchik, you are not allowing youngsters to study Torah. And this was on Tuesday. The Rav used to give shiur Tuesday, Wednesday, and the Rav... What do you mean? What do you mean? Rebbe, I just graduated Princeton. Oh, at the Rav, you know, an Ivy League college already. Princeton, yeah. Oh, wow. I want to learn this year. I don't understand Yiddish. And the Rav said, what? You don't understand Yiddish? I'll tell you what I'll do. Tomorrow the shiur will be in English and I'm giving you a beginner after the shiur. And Wednesday morning, 9 o'clock, the shiur, because he flies back at 1 o'clock to Boston, the shiur was in English. Those of you who remember my dear colleague, we grew up together, Rabbi Abba Braunspiegel. Abba was hysterical. He was so angry. It was his native language. He went through the concentration camps. He survived not to learn Torah in a Goyish language, but to learn Torah in Yiddish, the language that Moshe Rabbeinu received the Torah from our Kaddish program. That's... Well, what are you laughing? When I learned in Lakewood, they convinced me. Bishchein, Gleibich Astos Zemes. We can design Anderish. I learned him. What are you talking? Zucker, I remember, who even hucked me ahead like that. And I believe him till today. So the Rav broke into English. And what that means, essentially, I'm a cliché. Normie Gold, who learned in English, or Rabbi Mutz, you studied with me in the Kollel in English, you're a klishlishi. So this had tremendous implications because the only Rebbe from the old God who could make this change, bridge the gap, was Rav David Lifshitz. Can anyone tell me why? Hu shalat b'yivrit. The other rabbis were finished. And ultimately, Rabbi Volk became redundant. He knew English. He read the New York Times. But it's a big difference between reading and between able to give a shiur and reach a crescendo in a language which is not native to you. When he took ill in his late 60s, had heart trouble, so the yeshiva retired him. He recovered. He wanted to come back. And Rabbi Lamb told him, look, it's a different yeshiva today. The boys don't understand Yiddish. All right, he'll teach in a broken English. Doesn't speak to the new generation. And they didn't take him back. Now, he wound up in Florida, retired, but very bitter at the yeshiva. And in his sixth and seventh volumes of the Sha'arei Tohar, he published a great deal, and he was a tremendous lamdan and baki in Seder, Kodshim, and Taharot. In the introductions, he's very caustic against the yeshiva, against Rabbi Belkin, against Rabbi Soloveitchik, against Rabbi Lamb. Introductions that shouldn't have been written, but they were, and they were published. So the yeshiva responded in 1986. Yeshiva Shul Chochanim celebrated 100 years of existence. It begins on the Lower East Side with Yeshiva Eitz Chaim. Eitz Chaim later develops into Yeshiva Shul Chochanim. Later they both merge. And it's 100 years. They gave a small book out about the Rosh Yeshiva who taught there over the millennium, who were no longer alive, and Rabbi Volk is missing. This picture started to circulate, and I can show it to you in the office of the administrator of the Gris building, my Talmidah, who comes from this community, Stephanie Strauss, today. And you look at Stephanie's picture, sent to her by YU Public Relations. Everyone is identified, and there's Rav Volk, unidentified. So I have the privilege in this book, Be'ezrat Hashem, the picture comes back, his identity comes back, and I have to say to you, and I referred to this yesterday as well in a different Sheyura, Hakol Tului B'Mazel. Remember I spoke about the Zohan Vayakhel, Afilu Sefer Torah Shebeheichal. We spoke, remember you go to the Heichal, the nine Sifrei Torah I'm told here. So the one you take out, it's Mazel, a Mazel for the Sefer Torah. I've been through life, I've seen my colleagues, my students, my Rebbeim, and without elaborating, I can enthrall you with stories from today until Erev Yom Kippur. You have to be the right person in the right place at the right time. Very few of us are privileged to achieve these three concepts. A real niche where we succeed, where we belong, where we're the person who is needed. And it's a Rachmanis. Many people had Baruch Hashem. They had Hatzlacha, Rabbi Belkin, Rabbi Lamb. I want to, Vuhu Rachum, it's in this week's Sedra, V'alachta b'drachav, in Ekev, and looking to Rashi, quoting the Sifri, that Mahu Rachum afataracham, Mahu chanun afatachanun. Let's be gracious, and let's forgive Rav Volk, and let's bring him back to life. So that's one picture. A second picture, which I've been working on for years, and I'm now ready to publish. There's one quintessential picture of Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. Whoever publishes about Yeshiva University publishes that picture. I've published it twice already. I published it in The Rav, The World of Rabbi Joseph V. Soloveitchik. I published it in my scholarly memoir, From Washington to Washington. All right, it was always published, the Rav teaching a class in the yeshiva. 29 people appear in the picture when it's not cropped. Sometimes you see it a little smaller. And I've been working years. I've now identified 27 out of the 29 people. And this identity is go on to give Sheyurim from now until 49 years later, the Shemitah year, perhaps I'll stop. Why? The two I didn't identify are simply totally blocked, and the Talmidim near them are no longer alive. So I had no means. Maybe when the picture comes out, someone will contact me. But 27 we have for sure, definite identities. Even though sometimes you only see a shoulder, sometimes the head, just the top, the hair. But I remember who they were, where they were. The picture, by the way, is from 1960, which also is an absolute identification, because Danny Greer, our friend who switched Torah from its Mama Lashon to Agoyish Lashon, is in the picture. So he can only be there in 1960, 60, 61, but I think it was 60. Now you look at the picture, wow. You all know that what's called Orthodoxy, I never use the word, I consider it an insult to Judaism. Orthodoxy was given to us by our non-religious brethren, narrow-minded, one way. It's the exact opposite of Torah. Torah is filled with halacha, with machloket, halacha. We try to reach a conclusion. When it comes to hashgafa, ragada, homiletics, we're filled with 10 different opinions and we never reach a conclusion. Each one in accordance with his own feelings and understanding and psychological makeup, reach your own opinion. As I say in Washington, the halacha is the frame around the picture. That frame may never be broken. But the picture we paint is individualistic. There's a chassid, there's a litvak, there's a yeka, there's a wayu person, and a gudist, a mizrachist, etc., etc. What's amazing about that picture of the Talmidim, they speak in terms of the Orthodox Jews today. You have the right wing, the centrists, maybe you call it modern Orthodoxy. I was very upset, and the Wikipedia article on me, it listed me as affiliation, modern Orthodox. So I yelled and shouted so long someone heard me. Today it says Orthodox. Oh, Baruch Hashem. I don't want to qualify my commitment to Torah. What is modern? What, I have to look at Clinton? I have to look at JFK? I have to look at Mr. Trump for the modern world? I'm not in that world. I'm a Torah Jew, period. But you have the centrist. You have the left wing. Wow. You look at that picture. All the leaders, basically, of the future, right wing, centrist, left wing, orthodoxy, are right there in the picture, sitting before the Rav B'dechilu Rechimu. Little students shaking and shivering before their master. So now I want to ask you, is this a compliment to the Rav? And here you come to the heart of one of the issues that challenges us today. When Moriah Rebbe died, you may recall the late Jewish observer, Mishpacha, put it out of business, which to me was a shame, because the Jewish observer was not on a popular level. It had articles that you could bite your teeth into, and for me it was very fascinating to read what's the thinking is in the world which I don't identify with, the Agudat Yisrael world. And so when the Rav died, the right wing couldn't ignore it. And they had a page on the Rav on the obituary, and it was whoever edited it, it was a terrible mistake. You're writing obituary so you don't agree with the Rav, but don't write anything negative. And they wrote a negative line that, unlike the real Torah world where everyone looks alike and thinks alike and dresses alike, the Rav had so many different Talmidim that you can't tell what he really thought from his Talmidim, because you had right, center, left. Absolutely true. To me, that's the greatest compliment you can give to the Rav. Because to me, that's the heart of Yiddishkeit, the heart of our teachings. I am proud to tell you, I have students who are, let me tell you the story I write about in Washington, B'didi HaVeYuvda, it happened to me. One Cholamoid, I'm walking with a YU graduate, by the way, Rabbi Kufnis, he worked for Shfut Ami. He was in America, he's no longer alive, he died young, lo aleinu. But he had your position, and he worked out of Israel. He didn't work out of Teaneck Birkenfeld. He worked out of Israel, but he came to America quite often. He had your position. We're going back many years. But he was a real YU guy, that there's nothing in the world outside of YU. Shalini, Bishvili Nivra Olam. So I'm walking with him, Cholamoid, Cholamoid, it had to be, I believe, Cholamoid Sukkos, but it was Cholamoid. And we're walking, coming from the Shvut Ami original building right above Meir Sha'arim, right above, in Geula, the building that I'm sure you've been in. And we're walking down Rehov Strauss, coming to the center of the city. And opposite us is a Jew walking along with Hasidisha Begadim, Kleider, with a Strimel. And when that Jew sees me, he runs over and hugs me. Shalom Aleichem, Odim L'Simcha, Chagim L'Sasom, Moriu Rebbe. It's my Talmud from BMT, married a Talmidah of mine from the Israeli Mechlala. And when we walked away, he says to me, where did you feel that you raised Talmidim like that? I said, you idiot, you halfwit, you dummy. Who are you, Jackie Gleason? You should compliment me. How did you succeed that you can raise Talmidim in the Eidah Haredit that they acknowledge that you put them on the path and they got Torah Hashem to me, Shalom Aleichem, Mori Rebbe. And I'm proud to tell you I have Talmidim right of center, centrist, left. I have Talmidim who taught me Rebbe. I'm quoting a Talmud now. You got used to teaching women Gemara? You got to get used to them laning the Torah and davening famomet. You follow me? A Talmud who studied with me in BMT. It's before the Kollel. Oh my gosh. And he has chutzpah. But all right. I understand from his point of view. He's educating the Rebbe. This was the Rav. If you recall, I alluded to this, and again, I hope one of my lectures here. No one had the deep, variated experiences of Mori Rebbe. He was born in Pruzhana. One grandfather was Reb Elia Feinstein, Pruzhana Rav. One grandfather was Reb Chaim Priska. His mother's first cousin was Reb Moshe Feinstein. By the way, not the Feinstein. The Feinstein connection, Reb Moshe Feinstein, Reb Pruzhana, were distant cousins. But the Rav's mother and Reb Moshe, each one's mother, the Davidoviches, they were sisters. The Davidovits in English, Davidovich in Yiddish, they were sisters. So they were first cousins. So imagine that heritage. Reb Elia, Reb Chaim. Then he spends his formative years in Chaslovich. I could entertain you from now until the day after Yovel on stories the Rav told us about Chassidus and what he saw in Chaslovich and what he saw in Chabad and what he saw afterwards in Warsaw and the Gerish Stibble and the Majester Stibble. And then he goes to Germany. 26. Germany, Berlin, the heart of culture, the center of the Western world, the Rav, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the greatest lady of the 20th century, give me her name. You studied with her. I brought her into the Kollel, Nechama Leibovich, Rabbi Yitzchak Kuttner, Rabbi Chiyul Yaakov Weinberg, Rabbi Chaim Heller, Professor Avram Yeshua Heschel, the Kapitschnitzer Rebbe's son, David. Oh, wow. And then he comes to Boston. How many Shomer Shabbos Jews were there in Boston above the age of 16, 17, I'm quoting the Rav, and under the age of 70? The Rav said, when I came, yeah, above 70, there were Shomer Shabbos, Shomer Sundays, Shomer Monday. They were all retired. No one worked. Could you imagine? So the Rav, he shifted gears. He originally was on a Gudis, became a Mizrachiz, but his whole hashkafa broadened. And he said it openly in a magnificent talk. To me, it's the most important hashkafic talk the Rav ever gave. It influenced my whole life, as you saw a minute ago, my whole style of teaching, my whole relationship with my thousands of students. Mori Rebbe, speaking to the Mizrachi in the late 50s, he spoke about Yosef V'Yechav. Now, what were they fighting about? The dreams, the moon, the star. What were they fighting about? What was the conflict? Why didn't the brothers listen to Yosef? And the Rav explained it was a hashkafik machloket. The brothers were living in Goshen. They were happy. They were farmers. They were at home, at ease. They knew their work. Why worry about tomorrow? Why worry we may be in Egypt? Didn't God say that you're going to be Gerim, you're going to go to a strange country, and you're going to have to work there? And no, don't worry about tomorrow. We have today. Leave it be. Yosef HaTzadik said, no, we have to prepare. We're going to go down to Egypt, and when we're not prepared, we're not going to succeed. It's the heart of the technological Western world. We have to be ready. We have to learn the new culture. And the brothers laughed at him. And Mori Rebbe said, when it comes to halacha, the Beit Din decides. God gave us a Torah. It's a Torah Chaim. You can't ask God to answer the question. You have to decide. And that's, of course, the Gemara in Bav Metzia, Daf Nun Dalet, Tanur D'Achnai, where they paskin that it's no longer pure. And one Tana says it is pure, and God yells out, it is pure, halacha k'Rabbi Elazar, he's correct. And the Beit Din says, lo bashamayim hi, v'lo mei v'hayam, and they essentially tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's none of your business. You gave us the Torah, Torah t'chayim hi. We have to decide. And the Gemara says, Eliyahu HaNavi met God and asked him, how do you feel that your children are smacking your face? And the Ribbono Shel Olam says, Nitzchuni banai, Nitzchuni. It's a rabbinic aphorism afterwards. They're right. The Rav says, that's in halacha. Halacha, you never look over your shoulder. You paskin. When it comes to hashkafa, there you have to reevaluate your thinking. You have to look over your shoulder and see what God wants. Are you succeeding? Has it caught on? Does it make sense? And he said the machlokes of Yosef and his brothers was the machloket of the Aguda and the Mizrahi. I'm quoting Rebbe now. The Aguda was happy. We have Tells, we have Panovich, we have Mir, we have Slabotka, we have the Chassidiot of Gur, of Bells, of Munkach, etc. Why are we concerned with tomorrow? Mizrahi said, the world is shaking. Who knows what will happen because of Hitler? We have to build a homeland. We need a place ready to take in the Jews, the refugees, to rebuild, recast, recharge ourselves. And he says to the Mizrahi Convention, here we have to look over our shoulders. And the Hashgacha Pratit has paskind, Yosef HaTzadik was right. Mizrahi was right. And this is a classroom. There are many hashgafas. Don't force your thinking upon anyone else. Everyone is entitled to freedom of choice. But I always stress, reevaluate. Don't live on blindly. You have to reevaluate as time moves on. And this was a great gift I got from the Rav. He did not allow a cult around him. Some of you are aware, I just mentioned to a student, Baruch Ato Adonai Eloheinu Melech Olam Shakoni Yemek Baral. I just mentioned to a student, if you know NYU, the Mashpir is leaving. It's also my Talmud, Rabbi Moshe Weinberger, the Yesh Kodesh. And my student said to me, Rebbe, there's criticism of him. It's a cult. I said, it's a cult? Chassidus is based upon the concept of a cult. When you're a chassid, there's only one person that counts for you, the Rebbe. You're criticizing the Eish Kodesh Rebbe because people view him with such Yirat HaKavod? I said, that's part of Hasidus. If you're going to criticize him, then you better criticize Lubavitch and Ger and Bells and Munkach and right down the line on Sadi Gera and Ruzhin and Colin Stalin. That's Hasidus. But there's freedom of choice. If it works for you, fine. The Rav didn't allow a cult. He was Halitvisha. The Rav used to get hysterical. Tunish vasichtu, don't do what I do because I do. And I'm quoting him word by word. Only do what I do if you agree I'm correct. And I once saw an incident I shake until today. I've quoted it many times. Students have checked it out. They say, Rebbe, you got it right. I got it right. I'll never forget it as long as I live. We had one terrible complaint against the Rav. Rebbe, we never see you. We never have a chance to observe you. So what's been a Hasidic Rebbe with that an uncooking when I daven? What am I, a Hasidic Rebbe? You gotta stare at me when I daven? Spend the Shabbos at the yeshiva, not in Boston. Finally, Vayehi Hayom, I remember it was Yisrael Reese, was the Gabbai, he just died, Zichrono Livracha. I made his Shidduch, by the way. Yisrael Reese was he, the Rav is coming for Shabbos. Spending Shabbos at his mother across the street, he and his wife are coming. Hundreds of kids came in the afternoon to hear the Rav speak. The Bronx was the big area that fed thousands of students, maybe tens of thousands over the years, into what is Yeshiva University today. We were within walking distance. I had a half-hour walk. Others had a 20-minute walk, a 15-minute walk. Wow. So now the Rav spoke, and we daven Mariv, and Yisrael Reese comes over to Rebbe. I see it before my eyes. He says, Rebbe, we'd like to honor you to make Havdalah. Okay. And he puts down the wine in front of him, and suddenly 300 kids sit down. And the Rav, I can never figure, who taught you the secret to sit down for Havdalah? Said, Rebbe, you just gave a major public shiur. It was 1955 when he gave the famous shiur, Ein Osin Mitzvot Chavilot Chavilot, and the great part of the shiur, Kiddush Havdalah, and the Rav developed the whole concept what Havdalah is about, and it ends the Sudat Shabbat. It's now going to be a weekday table. But you have to sit around the table because the way you begin with the kviyot, you end with the kviyot. And then you can take the tablecloth after Havdalah. And everyone said, Rebbe, you just gave a shiur. It was amazing. The man spoke in front of 1,500 people at that time, gave an unbelievable shiur, and he never expected anyone to listen to him. You follow me? It's not a cult. It's Islam, this learning. And ain't hachinami. If Normie Gold came to him and said, Rebbe, should I sit or stand for Havdalah? The Rav would say, Tu vas ayatata hat getan. Do what your father did. The lumdis. It wasn't a cult. And he allowed individuality. And this is why, out of one classroom, you'd be flabbergasted. Who is sitting before the Rav, b'dechilu arechimu, a who's who in Orthodox Judaism at this moment in time, from the left all the way to the right, all the way to one Talmud, a gon, a deer, who left the yeshiva in anger, it's not frum enough, and became the Rosh Yeshiva of Lander College, the first Rosh Yeshiva. There he is, right there, okay? That's that picture. Art scroll. Let's take another picture and a document. Art scroll has done wonders. They changed the world, for good or bad. I have to tell you, today I barely have a first-year student, Nicola, who takes my class. It's all second-year students and many outsiders, Rabbanim, world-famous professors, etc., etc. Why? Oy vey. They grow up in art school. Here, they're in Griscola. They have to take exams in Yoredeya, Gemara. Oh boy, this to them, it's like a tremendous mountain that they have to climb. Who has the time to luxuries to listen to Rakefet tell jokes and analyze the baseball situation? Okay? That's the reality, David. That's the reality. Sad but true. All right. So whenever I'll say Art Scroll took away Lashon HaKodesh, I know I'm going through Shas a third time. Whenever I have a difficulty, I take Steinsaltz in Hebrew. To me, it's fabulous. But they don't have that ability. And Art Scroll totally destroyed it. I grew up in Bnei Akiva. From the age of 12, I'm reading more Hebrew than I'm reading English. Today, that's not so. So whenever I say that in public, three people will accost me after the Shia. You should know, Rabbi Rakefet, we are only frum because of Art Scroll. I said, oh, what can I say? I raised my hands. Better one frum Jew, and no one should know Hebrew, than everyone, God forbid, should be Mechallel Shabbos, but they'll know Hebrew. So I lose. But all right, Art Scroll is Art Scroll. It's here to stay. They've done wonders. They've changed the world. They have created many Balei Tshuva. Many people are touching and learning Gemara. It's not the Litvish learning that I grew up on, but they're not. They are contemporaries with the Gemara. They feel it. But their history books are slanted. And here we come to a tragedy of intellectual dishonesty. When you're intellectually dishonest, it's not just in one area. It becomes part of your personality. I'm a Talmud of the Rav, and many times we feel, and then I talk it over with the old Talmudim of the Rav who are still with us, and we all agree, if you ate Chazer on Yom Kippur and took a sandwich on Pesach and took bread and heated up meat and milk in the sandwich on Pesach and ate it, you did a sin. But you could do tshuva, you know it's a sin. The problem with Art Scroll is intellectual dishonesty. This is a fadubbenkeit. It becomes, I don't know how to translate that into English, a fadubbenkeit in the personality. And this is why you have in Israel, it's an unbelievable scandal after scandal, yeshiva boy after yeshiva boy. They're coming to Israel with suitcases. They open up the suitcases, a hidden suitcase on the bottom, customs unzips it, $1 million worth of drugs being smuggled in. This is what goes on, you see in America, in Israel, Lower Leno, there's a case now where a mother injected children with insulin, they should show diabetes, be able to get money from the government. Ha'ima has a record, is every headline. She's still in jail, they haven't let her out yet. It's beyond words. But sure, when you begin and you sit in the Knesset, and you don't take a sar, they take Leitzman, he's the skan sar, hey, all the authority of a sar, but he's a skan sar. No achrayut for the general community. I'm going into a good theology now, it's not for now, but it's intellectual dishonesty. And it begins, you see an Art Scroll, you open up a volume on Rav Sensor Folkesh, a beautiful volume. I wrote letters, I never even got an answer. One big Agudah said, you wrote a letter, I'm going to see to it that they answer you. You shouldn't be ignored. I got that letter like it snowed yesterday. I think it rained. I don't think it snowed. Correct me if I'm wrong. Nechtek is Schnee. So, Torah began in America, Mr. Shraga Feivel Mendelovich. No mention of Rabbi Revel. Take the volume on Mr. Shraga Feivel Mendelovich, whom I love. I know half his family studied with me, and I know many members, and wow, can talk about him for hours. Torah began with Mr. Mendelovich, and they tell story. The Meitzer Tehili, Rabbi Revel, brought Reb Shlomo Palachek to America. He landed the boat dock September 1st, 1922. It changed all of Torah in America, elevated it 49 more levels. And he was unhappy at the yeshiva. He wanted to come to Teira Vidas. What lies? Unhappy at the yeshiva. His two sons went to the yeshiva. His daughter was Rabbi Revel's personal secretary. His son-in-law was a yeshiva graduate. It's beyond words. So I was very upset. I wrote again with the Mendelovich book, the Hershein book, and I got nowhere. So I went to my files, and the first thing I pulled out, you know, files that I put aside when I finished my doctorate in writing the first draft, 1964, 65. I got my doctorate 67, or 66. I got my doctorate. The graduation was 67. So the first thing I pulled out was the published obituary for Rabbi Revel by Yeshivat Torah Vedat. And you will see that obituary in this volume, Be'ezrat Hashem. Wait till you read it. More than that, I uncovered a Mr. Irwin Waxman in West Hempstead at the time. Today he's more in Deerfield Beach. He's no youngster. But his mind is 100%. But more than 20 years ago. And I got hold of another student of mine, Beryl Phillips, also West Hempstead at the time. By the way, with Beryl Phillips, I go back 90 years. David, you're wondering 90 years? Rabbi, wondering 90 years? My wife's mother taught his father. Third grade in Yeshivat, Torat Chaim. Yes, I said Eitz Chaim, or you corrected me. Whatever. You get the picture. Brooklyn. Bensonhurst, I think, at the time. Where was it? East New York. It hadn't moved yet. No, later it moves. All right. East New York. So we go back 90 years. So I had Irwin Waxman, who was a Talmud in Torah Vedas, who was sent by the Rosh Yeshiva with a whole group of boys to the funeral with their two rebbeim, Rabbi Quinn, if you remember the name, and Rav Avram, Pam, Rav Avram Pam, Rav Avram Pam, to the funeral, and I had him give a statement to the lawyer, and then the lawyer, with his notary public, with his stempel, put the stempel on, and that document appears in this section on photographs and documents. Will it make a difference? Rak Heffet is no youngster. He's been through life. It will absolutely not make a difference. But Rak Heffet will feel better that the truth is available for people who have an honest heart and real Yirat Shemayim. And let me go one step further. I'll end off with Divrei Torah. It's all on YU. This is a lecture for people who love YU. Let me go one step further. My dear friends, many of you YU graduates, Trust Yeshiva College, Stern College, graduate schools, REITs, who do we owe YU to? We're only sitting here because of one person that I'm the only one in this room who knew her well. Mrs. Sarah Chaya Sara Revel. She is responsible for it all. Can anyone tell me what I'm talking about? Okay. Let me go back in time. Do you remember Reb Moshe Bick? Who here is from the old Bronx? Reb Moshe Baruch Hashem. All right. Later he moves to Brooklyn. Posek Mufhab. I had spoken learning with him many times. Yeshiva graduate out of the 30s. So Reb Moshe Bick told me when I was working on my doctorate, he said, you should know. He spoke perfect English. He was born here, I believe. You should know. The yeshiva only exists because of Rebbetzin Revel. And when I did my research, I found out he was right. And he said that was the first shidduch in America. And the story is very simple. Rabbi Revel in his youth was a gaon, self-taught, as I mentioned. And then he got involved with the great vision of the time, socialism that later leads to communism. The Tsar wasn't very happy with the socialists. The Jewish socialists had their own union, the Bundist, as you recall. And in 1904, 1903, Rabbi Revel was invited to spend room and with free room and board in a Russian jail by the Tsar, along with many others. By the way, I researched this thoroughly and it's everything. I mean, I heard from Estrella, I heard from Rabbi Revel's son, but at the YIVO, I actually found the sources in the Yiddish newspapers of that time. So he got out of jail and he figured, better get out of here. And he had relatives in America. So in 1905, he took the boat and winds up in the United States. 1906, he arrives. And could you imagine, here is a greenhorn, was red at zerbrochene English, native language Yiddish, little few words in English. He's coming through immigration, and someone would tap him on the shoulder and say, young man, in 1986, they're going to issue a stamp in your honor. He would have looked at them. 1986, the American government issued a $1 stamp with Rabbi Revel's picture on it to celebrate the 100th anniversary, as I mentioned before, of Yeshiva University. So he comes to America, he comes to Yeshiva Chochanan on the east side, and he's learning, minding his business, and Rabbi Leventhal of Philadelphia comes in and visits the yeshiva once a week, and he sees this bright young man, and he says, nah, you know too much, you don't have to learn in the yeshiva, come to Philadelphia, you'll assist me in the rabbinate, and you have to get secular degrees. And Rabbi Rebbe goes to Philadelphia. He later becomes the first PhD of Dropsy College, 1912. Dropsy College, which today is the Semitic Graduate School of the University of Pennsylvania. He's the first graduate. Well, he's now growing a little older, and Mizucht v'em Shidduch. They start searching for a Shidduch for him. There's a Rabbi Zivitz in Pittsburgh, Rabbi Yamin Zivitz, also a Europeisha Rav, and he tells Rabbi Leventhal, there's a girl growing up in Marietta, Ohio, Chaya Sarah Travis, who's a very frum girl. No yeshivat at the time, no Beis Yaakov, no Central, no nothing, public school, but the home influence. And they introduce them. Bernard Revel travels to Marietta, Ohio. I taught the great-grandson of Dr. Muscat, who proposed the shidduch to Rabbi Zivitz. He was a student in Gris Kollel. Got a smicha from the yeshiva. He's a rabbi in Oceanside today. His great-grandfather proposed the shidduch. They got engaged, 1909, got married. Ah, but Mrs. Revel, who was a high school graduate, had a PhD. Papa has dough. That PhD built the yeshiva. Rabbi Revel went into the oil industry with his in-laws, Tulsa, Oklahoma. 1915, the yeshiva pleaded with him, come to New York. And he gave up everything and refused to take a salary. He never took a penny from the yeshiva until 1922, when due to Standard Oil, the Rockefellers' unfair practices, the family business went down. But he came, they contributed. He built the high school January 1916. We celebrated over 100 years recently. And it was due to Mrs. Revel that Rabbi Revel could become Rabbi Revel, the first president and Rosh Yeshiva. And I finally want to end off before the Divrei Torah. So I have to tell you, when you come into my office, you will see my, what I call, my smicha. I consider myself the only Rosh Kolo in the world to get smicha from a lady. My smicha from YU It's worthless because everyone gets the same klaf. You can be a tzaddik, you can be a rasha, you can be a conservative rabbi already in the shia, you can be in chovevei Torah, but the same smicha. That's worthless. I did get the only smicha the mashgiach gave out in America, Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Cohen Lesson. That's a personal smicha. That's worth more. But nothing compares to my smicha from this lady. That's the document that you see in my office. And there's a story of Hashgacha Pratit that we cry whenever I meet the people who discuss. They told me they cried when they opened it the first time. And the story is very simple. Bernie Lander, Rabbi Dr. Bernard Lander, the genius of geniuses. How he does it, I don't know. So many institutions, medical schools, dental schools all over the world. And then the yeshiva and Lander College, and everything is in the black. And as Bernie told me, I make money from the goyim to support the yidden. Okay, genius. So Bernard Lander was then a YU person, and he was dean of the Bernard Rebel Graduate School. And Bernie says to me, he's the one, this whole doctorate came about because of him. I wanted to write on the Netziv. And Rabbi Dr. Bernard Lander said to me, don't get started, we have to think about it, I may have a different proposal for you. And 2 weeks later, he calls me in and he assigns the proposal and he breaks into tears. I realized then it was serious business and he puts his hands on my shoulders. Arnold, just remember, this was my Rebbe. No one remembers him. And what you're going to write is going to be his only monument. And we reenacted it in Yerushalayim, Yer HaKodesh, in the home of Tovi Willick, Zichrona Levracha, many decades later, and both of us crying like babies at that moment when he broke into tears so many years earlier. So he calls Mrs. Revel, and he sets up an appointment for me with Mrs. Revel at the Broadmoor Hotel, 102nd Street and Broadway, where they lived. Rabbi Revel already was dead since 1940. This is perhaps 62, 63. And I go to meet her. And she tells me, there's a Rabbi Shurin who just wrote, Rabbi, he just died maybe a year ago, a year and a half ago. And Rabbi Shurin, Yisrael Ben Sion Shurin, just wrote. He wrote for the Forwards, the Yiddish newspaper, and other Yiddish newspapers. He afterwards taught at Stern College. He wrote something on my husband, you should see it. And that was fine. I never heard from Rabbi Shurin, and life moved on. And many, many decades later, his son and daughter-in-law listen to every shir I give. Whenever they come to Yerushalayim, they come to visit me, Rav David and Esther Shurin, wonderful people. And suddenly they come, we have a big surprise. We're always the surprise. When their father died, they had a lawyer who knows how to look through an estate and what's left and sort out documents. And they get to a folder marked Rothkopf. They open up the folder, and there's a letter from Mrs. Revel to Rabbi Shurin telling him about me. And her description of me as she saw me at that moment in time. My dear friends, when you read that letter in the next volume, let's see whether or not you agree. A smicha like that, very few people were zeichet to receive. So we owe a great debt of gratitude to the Revel family. And let's be honest, and I want to be honest too. I don't know if we're all happy of what Yeshiva University is today. You can have various opinions. I don't really know what's going on here. I live in Israel 50 years. But when I come to the campus on occasion, I have to look twice. I see certain things that do not make me happy. And you can criticize. But we're talking about history. We're talking about what was 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90 years ago. Is Lakewood today the Lakewood I learned in? Now you just think, Lakewood today has no resemblance to what I was privileged to study in. When I went to Lakewood, it was Kletsk, it was Europeish, it was a different world. Today it's not only American. Would Rabbi Aaron Cutler be happy with Lakewood today? It's Hasidus. Whoever believed everyone wears the same hat. When I learned in Lakewood, no one wore a black hat except the Rosh Yeshiva. Even the Mashgiach, the Alt Mashgiach, Rav Nosson Vachtfolger, wore a brown hat when he died. Every Talmud wore a hat, your baseball cap, this type of hat, the other. Who would have the chutzpah to wear a black hat? And is sameness what we want? The Rav had a lot of difficulty. I write about it. I quote Rebbe. I don't write about it. Write what the Rav had to say about the swing to the sameness in the 1970s. Pretty sharp words. Is Lakewood the same? Rav Malkiel Cutler stands with the Satma Rav? I don't want to get sick. Rav Baran was furious at Satma. He accused Satma of creating endless Mechalalei Shabbos. They refused to vote in the Israeli elections. If Aguda would have had 2 more seats, 3 more seats, it's X millions of dollars more for the party, for Chinuch Atzmai, for Beis Yaakov every year. And today you stand with Sone Yisrael, people who have no share, Bolam Habad, the Rambam, Hilchot Shuvah, Perek Gimel, Halacha Yiralev. Would Rav Aaron be happy? But we're writing history. What was, was. I can't write about Lakewood in my time with my feelings of Lakewood today, positive and negative. Can a yeshiva be 6,000 people? Becomes a tent. It's no longer a single institution. It's like Mir and Yerushalayim. I feel why you should limit the yeshiva to 500 students. A Rebbe has to know every Talmud by name and every Talmud intimately. It's to be a very close relationship. This is the secret of Torah Shabbat Peh, of Talmud and Rebbe, of the ongoing Mesorah, Moshe Tibel Misinai Masru Li Hoshua, etc. But gotta be honest, an art scroll is not on this topic, on this level. So to reiterate, we spoke about 3 documents, pictures. Number 1, restoring Rav Shmuel Elzia Volk to the living. 33 years he taught Torah. If we have any complaints, address them to Hitler, the world at that time that stood by and let us be butchered physically, spiritually, psychologically, etc. The picture of the Rav in 1960, 27 people identified. I hope Rabbi Kufnis, I don't know if he's here, but I hope Rabbi Kufnis, good, you're here. I hope Rabbi Kufnis, all the relatives of all the people I identify will contribute to Shvat Ami to get the book. Just a picture, their blood and flesh. 29 times 100 relatives each one has. You got a few thousand customers there. Dr. Bernard Revel, Rabbi Doctor, what this man accomplished, what this man did, there would be no Torah in America if not for Rabbi Revel. It would have only begun from scratch after World War II. This way, there was Torah, there was a basis, and when the immigrants, the refugees came in, you had on what to build. He turned the quicksand and planted the first garden. Today we have a multifaceted orchard. And the little side story of the document, which unbelievable, untouched from 64, I believe I dated it. There's an envelope and it has the stamp, untouched till after the recipient went to Olam HaEmet and his children happened to be my Talmidim. And someone else would have just stripped it up. What is this? Who is this? Nothing with nothing. And they recognized what it meant to them and what it means to me. And finally, let me conclude with Divrei Torah. They shouldn't say a Talmud of the Rav spoke so long and didn't say a word of Torah. That's why yesterday everyone said to me, how did you give 2 different drasha 2 minutes apart? And I answered, I didn't want anyone to say a Talmud of the Rav is so stupid as Alstas Ahalt and Hunt is Ein Drasha. All he can do is give 1 drasha. Baruch Hashem. I learned by the Rav and I gained from the Rav. This is from Rabbi Revel. The Medrash says, the Rav also dealt with it, but I want to deal with it the way Rabbi Revel dealt with it. The Mut Yaakov Chakuka, it's a Mechilta. The Mut Yaakov Chakuka al Kisei HaKavod. That on the Kisei HaKavod, there's the image of Yaakov Avinu. So there's a very simple question. Yaakov Avinu is only the third. What's wrong with Avraham Avinu? What's wrong with Yitzchak Avinu? Yaakov Avinu. But you see, each one had a separate mitzvah which he specialized in. Avraham Avinu, and you all know this from kindergarten already, Gemilat Chesed, Eshel, what Avraham did, gave everyone a place to sleep, food, and thanked the Lord. Yitzchak Avinu was the symbol of tefillah, avodat Hashem, akedat Yitzchak, har habayit, the Beit HaMikdash, this is all Yitzchak. Yaakov Avinu, yoshev ohalim, lo mush mitoch ha'ohel, he studied Torah. He was a matmid. That's why Yitzchak felt, why give him a bracha to go out and make a living, work the land, be a lawyer, a doctor, an accountant, an entrepreneur. Zala Zitzin and Lerin and Teira, that's what he's made for, cut out for. And Rabbi Revel said, the first wave of immigrants to the United States were the Germans. They started coming in 1840, before the Civil War. What's characterized the Germans? Gemilat Chesed. They built hospitals. They helped their fellow Jew. But that's what they did. They didn't go beyond that. And nothing remains of them. All the famous Germans, Bambergers, Kleins, Macy's, one by one, Lord and Taylor, they're all German Jews. The New York Times, show me one descendant who knows how to say Shema Yisrael. Even Chabad can't get them with their tefillin. Referring to yesterday's drasha. The Palisher Jews came next. 1870s, poured in, built shtiblach all over the place. You read the descriptions of the Lower East Side in the 1870s under over 200 shtibbles within one square mile. No, not remain from it. Their kids built conservative Judaism, their grandchildren built Reform Judaism, and their great-grandchildren get killed driving planes on Shabbos. The president of Hebrew Union College, could you imagine Shabbos morning crashes the plane he's piloting and dies a few miles from here. We're not talking ancient history or something far from here. It's beyond words. Their graduation, Hebrew Union College, the guest speaker, without shame or hesitation, every Jew should intermarry. That's the future of the Jewish people. Liberalism. To be a Jew is sinful. Desecration of what Judaism is all about. L'takein olam. I'm also in favor of tikkun olam, but first, tikkun Jews. If there's one Jew, mechal Shabbos, we have not succeeded yet. So the Polish Jews, yes, like Yitzchak Avinu, it left nothing. Then came the Litvish Jews. And in the 1880s, Etz Chaim began, the 1890s, Yeshivas Reb Tzchol Chanan, the 1900s, early 1900s, Yeshivat Rabbeinu Yaakov Yosef, RJJ, they started to build Torah. And when you start to build Torah, that gives us a future. That gives us Jews. That gives us a tomorrow. That gives us commitment. And yes, indeed, the Mut Yaakov Chakuka al Kisei HaKavod. And now I'll take it differently and end off from my Rebbe. Heard this from the Rav, And I used it very effectively in Australia to a, I didn't realize it was, I was the guest of the Mizrahi, but it was half Mizrahi and half Chabad, and East European Jews, survivors. And if I ever said a word that the audience absorbed with love, it was that night in Melbourne. So I heard from the Rav, Kisei Yaakov, the Mudjakov Chakuka, Al Kisei HaKavod. The Chafetz Chaim, don't have to tell you, Rav Shion, Meir HaKohen, Kagan, Putko, two family names circulate. Chafetz Chaim helped organize Agudat Yisrael. And he attended both Knesiyot that were still in his lifetime, the early 20s, and then the one in 29. And in 29, he already was aged, and they came to him, the most famous Rabbanim, Rebbe, we will make a build for Mike. We want to take your picture. And the Chafetz Chaim looked at them. What? And Rabbi Meir Shapiro, the Lublin Rav, Chassidish Yid, said to the Chafetz Chaim, "Ich will euch bringen a raya," as the Chafetz Chaim was lassen uns machen a bild for them. "I'll bring you a proof that the Chafetz Chaim has to let us take a picture of him." And the Lublin Rav said to the Chafetz Chaim, "The Mudjakov Chakuka al Kisei HaKavod." The Zel B'Shaila, the same question. Why not Avram? Why not Yitzchak? And he said to the Chafetz Chaim, "Because Yaakov Avinu was the last of the Avot before the Jews go into Galus, go down to Egypt. Let the Jews still see what a Jew looks like." And he said to the Chafetz Chaim, "You're the last. We're going into a terrible period now. There's so much anti-Semitism, hatred. We don't know what tomorrow brings. Let us take a picture to see what a real Jew looks like before the next Galus." And the Chafetz Chaim agreed. And that's how we have a picture of the Chafetz Chaim at the Knesia Gedolah. I want to thank you very, very much for being with me this Sunday morning. I really expected no one. Everyone I spoke to, they're running away, they're going away. There's a camp, a shmamp, a this, a that. And I don't know, I would make a cheshbon. A guy's here from Yerushalayim, he's going back shortly. But all right, everyone had to run, but I see what a crowd. And I want to welcome one of my great students, Rabbi David Pardo, who is a rabbi in this area. And just to see David makes me younger and makes me sad. Sad that I don't have him in my classroom. Younger, because it brings back the wonderful years we spent together. Chazak v'ematz. And this is Rav David Kufness. I will introduce him. Malk and I were tapped on the shoulder by the Mossad, 1980. How they got to us, they never told us. Even the volume that came out doesn't tell us either. And because of Malka, I couldn't say no. And it did require guts and courage. I'm not here to minimize it. To go in under a different identity to the Soviet Union. It's not Putin. This is the real communists. Putin happens to be an Ohev Yisrael. But there are reasons why. Maybe I'll tell you some. I don't have time now. Maybe some of you know. But we got involved, and I succeeded in what my missions were for the Mossad, and they asked me to help out, and for 10 years we lived a dual existence, normal people by day and crazy people by night. And we sent over 200 people. We kept the chain going until the fall of communism. It's an unbelievable story, and I suggest either read my work on it or read the Mossad's work. Well, when you come out of the Soviet Union and you're free again, you kiss the ground and you want to do something for your people. You can't just be oblivious. And I helped organize in 81, early 81, must be February, Shvut Ami. There were Russians learning in Itri, but I took the idea of BMT. I'm the only surviving member of the original BMT faculty. Not even all the students are alive anymore. And what was great about BMT? It was Anglos to Anglos teaching Torah in an Anglo language. I said Russians to Russians teaching Torah in Russians. The rest is history, and we're all over Israel. We're in about 13, 14 locations in Russia. A year ago, Shvet Ami insisted that Malkner and I go back to visit Russia. We spent a week in Moscow. And it's just overwhelming to see what has happened. And there's total freedom. The Jews show their Judaism in public. Children walk around with tzitzit out, with kippot, kosher restaurants, beautiful shuls. And the more Jews you create there, the best common aliyah. I like Teaneck Bergenfield, I have to say. The Trumat Maisrat we get from you encourages us to keep going. Same thing with Russia, but it also has a different effect. Jews come out of the woodwork who you never would dreamt were Jewish. My father was Jewish, I want to convert. My mother was Jewish, my grandmother Jewish. And we have created tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of Russian Jews who have Torah identity today. And this is Shvet Ami. We're the second biggest player on the Russian scene. Chabad is first. I always have to give credit to Chabad. I'm overwhelmed. I've seen Chabad all over the world. And if anyone criticizes Chabad, my presence, I tell a student to smack their face. The Messianists are crazy, but we're dealing with normalcy within the greater Chabad community. But not everyone wants to be a Chabadnik. And we're there with a more Litvish approach, but we reach out. Rabbi Kufnis will tell you. He today is our executive director, and above all, he has to raise a budget of a few million dollars a year to keep us going. And I've given the rights to all my public scholarship to Shvet Ami. I don't take one penny. Everything goes to Shvet Ami. David, it's
yours.
Thank
you, Rabbi Kefet, for a fascinating lecture. Thank you, everybody, for coming. Rabbi Kefet, you've written so many books, I needed a chair to carry them all. I couldn't carry them all.
If you're lucky, you don't have all the editions. If you had all the editions, it's for Revel and for Silver and for Sega. Thank you so much.
Rabbi Kefet has kindly agreed to stay behind and sign books today for Tzedakah for Shvet Ami. That will take place outside in just 3 or 4 minutes. Before that, I first of all just want to thank Seth Leibowitz for all his hard work, for bringing Rabbi Kefet to Beth Abraham this weekend. We all enjoyed many, many wonderful lectures. Of course, to all our sponsors who made this possible. And today's lecture, this last lecture, has been sponsored by Gedalia and Rachma Friedenberg and Phil and Janet Hyman, and we're very grateful for that. We've had the privilege today and over Shabbos of hearing from a respected Torah scholar, prolific author, and a beloved master teacher who has inspired and educated many thousands of students during his 60 years in the field. And I'm sure I speak on behalf of everyone when I wish him and his Eishes Chayil Malka many more years of good health, and they should be able to continue traveling, writing, and spreading Torah for many years to come.
Amen.
If you were to ask the leading Orthodox Jewish thinkers today, what is the biggest problem facing the Jewish people? So maybe one or two would say anti-Semitism. We've got a lot of enemies around the world. Maybe one or two would say infighting. We don't get along, we're our own worst enemy. But I believe that most experts will agree that the biggest problem facing the Jewish people today is assimilation into marriage. It's destroying our people, it's destroying our future. In England, where I'm from, so there's a 25% intermarriage rate. That means one out of four of every Jew in the UK is marrying out. Here in the United States, as most people know, that figure is much higher. The Pew study reports that 58%, that's almost two out of every three Jews in the USA, choose partners outside the faith. Now, that's a tragedy. But if you think that is bad, there is a much bigger crisis going on, not too far from here. And a lot of people don't realize that after the Iron Curtain fell in 1991, even though a million Russian Jews immigrated to Israel, but hundreds of thousands, and that's the lowest estimate, hundreds of thousands stayed behind in what is today the former Soviet Union, which is the world's third largest Jewish population after Israel and the US. And as we know, 70 years of communist rule almost completely destroyed the Jewish soul, the Yiddishkeit of these people. And that is reflected today in the 80 to 90% intermarriage rate in every country of the FSU. 80 to 90%. And I call these people the Jews that everyone has forgotten about. And that's because they're out of sight, out of mind. And let's face it, they don't really make a lot of noise. Shavuot Ami had the great honor to have Elie Wiesel as our honorary chairman for over 30 years until he passed away 2 years ago, almost to the day. And he wrote a famous book, you may know, after he went to visit the Jews in the Soviet Union, called Jews of Silence. And he ends one of the chapters with the following words. He says, "What torments me most is not the Jews of silence I met in Russia, but the silence of the Jews I live amongst today." Rabbi Kefet and Malka vowed in the late 70s that they would never be silent about this critical cause. They believe that if you care about the Jewish people, then you have to care about Russian Jews. You have to care about the hundreds of thousands of unaffiliated Jews who remain in the FSU today. And soon after their first trip to Russia for the Mossad, teaching Torah undercover, Rabbi Rakefet became a founding board member of Shavuot Ami. And since then, he has spent countless hours traveling with Malka, lecturing and raising awareness and funding for Shavuot Ami's critical work, training Russian rabbis and teachers in Israel to go back to the FSU and to help rebuild Jewish communities over there. A few months ago, Shavuot Ami honored Rabbi Rakefet at a dinner in Ra'anana in Israel for his over 30 years of service to the organization, and a young woman called Polina Mazarov spoke emotionally about how Shavuot Ami had changed her life. And she said that when she was 16 years old, she moved to Moscow to attend university there, and in her third year of university, she signed up for Shavuot Ami's two-week trip to Israel. And Polina explained that growing up in a secular family in Russia, she only remembered two Jewish experiences in her entire childhood. Firstly, she said, her father used to bring home Hanukkah candles, and he would light the menorah, and he used to read the bracha in Hebrew from the box. And she said the whole family used to laugh, because the words sounded so strange to them. She also remembers eating matzah in her home, although she confessed that they ate it all year round, and in addition to bread on Pesach. And that was her entire Jewish experience, until she spent 2 weeks with Shavuot Ami in Israel. And today, I'm very proud to say, and Polina told the crowd, she lives in Efrat with her Jewish husband. He's a trainer, sports trainer, her two-year-old baby. And she told the audience, if it wasn't for Shavuot Ami, she would have most certainly ended up marrying out. And sometimes it is that simple. Besides everything else that Rabbi Rakefet has done in his life, and this is only a partial list, student of the Rav, pulpit rabbi, high school Rebbe, editor of Encyclopedia Judaica, of course, master teacher extraordinaire, soldier in the IDF and the rabbinate, Mossad secret agent, professor of Talmudic literature at Grus, founding board member of Shavuot Ami, and of course, beloved husband, father, grandfather, and great-grandfather, who's now on his third time going through Shas word for word, he has somehow made time to write and publish these 9 amazing books. Important historical biographies, including the 2 out-of-print volumes on his teacher, the Rav, contemporary halacha, hashkafa, current issues, my favorite, his personal scholarly memoir, From Washington to Washington. What an amazing accomplishment, and truly incredible, and I could not put these books down. Rabbi Rakefet has spent over 30 years helping to reconnect unaffiliated Russian Jews to Jewish life. And today, there is an opportunity to partner with him by making a generous donation to his cause, to Shavuot Ami. Every amount is appreciated, and everyone will receive a full tax receipt. Most of these books are not available in any stores, and today, Rabbi Rakefet would like to give everyone here, as a gift, any one of his books for free, and he will sign it outside as a token of appreciation to anyone who makes a donation of $100 or more to Shavuot Ami. The more you give, the more books Rabbi Rakefet will give you as a thank you gift. And he's donating 100% of the proceeds to Shavuot Ami. All the details are on the second page of this leaflet outside on the table. Just fill out the second page, bring the book of your choice to Rabbi Rakefet outside, and he will sign it personally to you. Lastly, I want to tell you something very special about this 4-volume set, Rakafot Aharon. Rabbi Rakefet spent a tremendous amount of time and effort over many years writing, compiling, editing, and annotating the fascinating information in these four volumes. He has not taken any remuneration whatsoever for any of these four books of Rakafot Aaron. He wants all the proceeds to go to Shvut Ami. And this brand new fourth volume, Timeless Halakha and Contemporary History, it's only available today for pre-ordering. It's not finished yet. And that's because we want to give the people here today the opportunity to put a dedication into the first few pages before it's published. And every penny of the proceeds will go to Rabbi Rakefet Tzedakah to Shvut Ami. So if you want to put a dedication into this hardback book, will be around for a long time, fill out the front page of that form outside. If you do choose this book as your thank you gift, instead of taking the book itself to Rabbi Rakefet to sign, just take one of these stickers from the table, take it to Rabbi Rakefet, he'll sign it personally to you, and we'll put that sticker into the front of your book when it comes off the press very shortly. We'll send it to you with your dedication inside.
Don't say shortly, because I don't envision by Hanukkah. Will be okay if I give sign off and we can publish.
I was hoping Sukkot. We'll see. We'll see. As soon as it's ready, you'll get one of the first copies. And again, if you don't want to take any book home today, any donation is greatly appreciated. Thank you for listening, for your support, and please enjoy the refreshments outside. Thank you.